Hi, Ricky is very nice to me occasionally. He invites me up from the engine room to the first class saloon of the ship to talk to a few important people, and then I go back with my overalls on and run London's transport network on a daily basis. I'm responsible for all of London's public transport and its strategic road system except for the Tube, which is my colleague Tim O'Toole, who's having a rest today. And the National Railway Network, which is a mess. I work for Bob Kiely, and he works for the Mayor, and we're part of what is the most integrated transport organisation in London's history. It's not perfect, but it's better than anything we've had before. I'm not going to mention Tony's Routemasters. They're obsolete. All those in that picture are for sale, and if you see me afterwards, you can buy one. What I was going to talk about is how transport has shaped this city and what we might do with it in the future. Clearly, and Ricky blamed me, or somebody blamed me, it's all my fault really. It isn't, it's my predecessors, but the development of London's transport systems have been absolutely crucial in the shape of the present city. You can find innumerable examples, the building of the new road, now the Euston Road, and the constraints and the constraint of the Great Railway Termini put to the north of it, which got most of North London, inner North London, developed. The dense suburbs of inner North East London, which were developed as a result of the cheap workmen's trains of the Great Eastern Railway. Inner South and South East London, which were the result of the LCC's electric tram system. And then in the 30s, the growth of Surrey and Buckinghamshire and the suburbs of North and North East London by electric train. Common characteristic of all this, of course, is the provision of infrastructure. And by the way, another common characteristic is a complete lack of commercial success on the most part of anybody who built it, at least in the long term, and the need for public guarantees and funding to actually either prop up its building or to run it when it was there. So on to the 21st century. What clues are there in that? Well, firstly, as Tony said, we're lucky to have so much infrastructure, but the city is saddled with some very old equipment. Tim O'Toole, when he came from Philadelphia, was astonished to discover the oldest part of the underground is 145 years old, and it needs constant maintenance, and it's bloody expensive to do. It's also in a rotten condition. Secondly, clearly transport infrastructure does enable population and economic growth, but as I said, frequently can't be commercially provided. And there's a further big issue, which is a modern one, one of the last 30 or 40 years, which is that we now live in an age of great mobility with cheap transport and almost universal access to the car. We're charged with a lot in transport for London, but if you look at the two, maybe the two top issues, then I've got something to say on each of them. The first one I think is obvious, which is our role in keeping the economic force of London going in the 21st century by getting people to work in the central business area, not merely the West End and the City now, but also Canary Wharf and the developments to the east. We need to bring the Tube particularly to modern standards and to allow it to produce its maximum carrying capacity. We've got a peculiarly British method of doing this called the PPP, which involves huge rows with government, a large amount of lawyers' fees, and actually a very slow progress towards a system which will stagger to attain its potential any time this side of 2012. We've got an even worse situation with the National Railway Network, which is certainly, as far as London is concerned, is mismanaged. The National Railway Network could produce much more. It's also vital for bringing in hundreds of thousands of people from outside the Greater London boundary, but we don't have currently a method of investing in it to give to bring London its full potential. But I think in the next 4 or 5 years we'll have to. Simply because it's ridiculous. If you go down to Victoria Station in the evening peak at about 25 to 6, you can see a two-coach train leaving for London Bridge, which would stop at Brixton if there was a station, but it doesn't, and consequently has about 30 people in it. That's not a very good use of line haul capacity. And of course there is a need for future investment in new infrastructure. There's a Crossrail scheme which has been around for 20 years. It is essential. It's essential for keeping the economic engine of London going. All we need is the funding to provide it. And there's an observation of a weakness, which is that actually the Mayor has more control over London's transport than anybody else has had, I think, ever. But actually precious little way of raising money to either fund its operation or its reconstruction or its development. And that's an issue that I'm sure will be addressed again. My second point is not about that. It's about the suburban London. Three quarters of London's population live in the suburbs. It's a huge land area of relatively low density. You've seen some pictures of it, with a dozen town centres and employment of nearly 2 million people. Quite a lot of people both live and work in suburban London. Most of the suburbs, as I've said, were developed through public transport provision, but the movement there is now dominated by the car. Over 50% of journeys, of transport journeys in inner and outer London are by car. And I'd argue that it's in that vast area that actually we have the greatest challenges and the most to do. Population's increasing. Many of the suburban terraced and semi-detached houses are now subdivided, and the slower the Thames Gateway is to get started on what is a very ambitious target of several tens of thousands of houses, the greater the pressure in suburban London because the population is growing. It remains a real challenge for public transport, but it's relatively dispersed, it's still relatively low density, and it isn't clear here that actually infrastructure investment, other than in the main radial transport routes, will bring London-wide answers. And we've started to look at this, particularly from the strategic road network point of view. We've analysed what's been happening and what can be done to remedy it. There are some really significant problems. I published some statistics which apparently demonstrate that traffic volumes in outer London are static. It's nonsense. Congestion is actually getting worse, journey times are getting longer, and actually what we're showing is that the traffic capacity of the major roads has actually declined slightly because of interventions like more traffic signals and pedestrian crossings, and actually all that traffic is going on the minor road network, which we don't measure, which accounts for the phenomenon of people wanting traffic calming in their own street but not in anybody else's, because that's how they drive where they're going. Front gardens are now full of concrete for car parking, and it's the fourth car in suburban areas, two of them in the front garden and one across the front. It's the fourth car which causes the problems. And there's a significant pollution problem, the quality of life declines, and actually this is going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in those areas. So what are the remedies? Well, actually better public transport is one remedy. It's mostly by bus because of the nature of suburban London. We need more priority despite the road space that it takes, and that will provide some answer. Management of the road network on a more comprehensive and holistic basis will provide another, including the provision of better public space and a bit of public art to humanise things like the A13. A more radical approach is managing travel demand in this age of information technology by better public personal information, personalised travel planning, workplace travel planning, to persuade people to either walk, cycle, or use other modes than the car. Inevitably, in the longer term, I think, there'll be car restraint. The congestion charging scheme is one of Ken's great successes, but it's actually in a very limited area of London. Even then, it shows what can be done, because we've actually reclaimed road space for public space in Trafalgar Square, in Moorgate and other places. And my prediction is that actually in the next 10 years, we will get car restraint all over outer London, because it will be the only way to actually allow the suburban part of this city to continue to absorb people and to grow. In the medium to longer term, the way in which we plan for the suburbs will have to change in order to allow London to absorb economically and socially the 70 or 80,000 people who are still coming to it every year. We actually, for a public transport person, it may sound perverse, but we need to plan for less movement, or at least more local movement, greater density, greater development of public transport nodes, less out-of-town locations of workplaces, shopping, schools and hospitals. I've nearly finished. I didn't mention the Olympics or the Thames Gateway. They're really significant challenges in themselves, both in investment and operational. I'd say of those two, Ken has got a good handle on the Olympics. I think we could do better on the Thames Gateway. But I actually think that it's in the business of the investment to get people into the central area jobs, and particularly in the multiple challenges of the development of suburban London, that will be the really testing transport challenges that we'll have to solve in the 21st century. With good civic leadership, with vision, and with plenty of money, we can do it. Thank you.